went into madness, overlook some anecdote that seems off. It could be crucial. It could be the difference between failure and success. You're supposed to notice this stuff before it happens. So you also asked me about my mom. What I think about the pregnancy, if I'm worried. I guess that's fair. Major life changes are supposed to set us off. Any disruption in our day-to-day routine could cause problems, which is why my mom has been watching me more closely than ever. My mom had me pretty young. 20 is young to be a mom. That's 4 years from now for me. I can't imagine having a kid in 4 years. But I guess it makes sense that she and Paul want to have a baby. The funny thing is they didn't talk to me about it. My mom usually goes into excruciating detail about everything, so it's really out of character for her to keep this kind of secret. They waited until she was 3 months in to tell me. When they told me about it, Paul looked anxious, like he was afraid the news would set me off. Which made Rebecca cry, because why would a baby set me off? It's sad that my mom's worry is split between her thoughts about the baby and her thoughts about me. She shouldn't be worrying about me at all. Plus, I can hear Paul's reaction in my head. Metaphorically, of course. I don't actually hallucinate his voice. He's got his own kid to protect now. It's an almost Shakespearean turn of events, where I should be cast out because I pose a threat to the true heir. It's nice that I can talk to Maya about the pregnancy, at least. Her brothers are only 5, so she understands what it's like to be a lot older than your siblings. I think it's weird that I still haven't seen Maya's mom. She's a nurse and works strange hours, but still, I feel like I should have bumped into her by now. Okay, so my hand. This is what happened. Maya and I decided to stay late at the library after school on Thursday to work on some homework because Paul had to work late and my mom had a doctor's appointment. It was kind of a date. I brought gummy bears and she had peanut butter pretzels. If food is required for it to be classified as a date, then there you have it. I like libraries. If for no other reason than they give homeless people a place to hang out. There's something nice about the way you're never too old to go into one, but it still makes you feel the way it did when you were small. I still remember how my mom would let me wander the children's book section while she looked in the career section for jobs for my dad. And I liked the smell of books. A few minutes after I arrived, I noticed Ian staring at me. He had his feet up on a nearby table, and his eyebrows were raised. I'd unknowingly started twiddling the pen in my right hand to ward off the group of flies that were circling my stack of books. But then I realized he wouldn't have kept staring if that were actually what I was doing. The flies weren't real. So I stopped moving altogether. The flies were still there, moving in perfect formation. Maya came back from the copy room a few minutes later, and asked me why I was keeping so still. I told her I was studying. But really, I was just concentrating on not acting weird. Ian was still watching me. Then, out of nowhere, I felt like I needed to run. Part of me knew it was stupid, but I couldn't help it. I was convinced that I had to run. So I got up and sprinted toward the rows of desks near the reference section and tripped on an uneven piece of carpet and snagged my hand on the edge of a bookcase. It took a pretty big flap of skin off my palm. Enough to look pretty gruesome. Blood gushed all over the floor, and Maya screamed when she saw it. Her face turned white. I think that was the most shocking thing. She screamed in the library, and then started crying. I'd never seen her cry like that before, like she was scared. And the scary thing is that I liked that she lost control for me. Yes, that makes me a creep and a bad person, but isn't this stupid diary supposed to reflect me as I am? truthfully. So yeah, I like that she cried because I got hurt. If that makes me a creepy bastard, then that is what I am. The librarian made a pretty big scene too, which drew everyone else's attention to the puddle of blood soaking through the carpet.
I can drive you to the hospital,
Ian said, appearing at my side. The librarian looked at him with a soft expression, and I wondered how much of the staff he'd duped into believing that he was a decent human being. How could she miss the hungry expression on his face? That obsessive need for information. Of course he wanted to drive me to the hospital, but there was no way I was going to let that happen. Luckily, Maya stepped in just in time so I didn't have to say anything. Thanks, but not necessary, Maya said, her cheeks a little pale. I'll take him. The librarian's expression indicated that Maya's rejection of Ian's courteous offer was a bit rude. But after assuring her that we'd be able to get to the hospital on our own, we rushed out of the library. I heard people whisper and could feel Ian's eyes on my back as we got out of there. Douchebag. Why did you start running? Maya asked, trying to keep her voice calm as she fumbled for her keys. Because I'm an idiot, I said, hoping that was a good enough explanation. She looked at me like it wasn't. But she didn't say anything else as we got into her car. My hand was throbbing. She had her dad's minivan that day, so she drove me to the emergency room, where we were met by my hysterical mother. Her expression oscillated between concern for me and concern that she might inadvertently say something about my illness in front of Maya. I told her it was just a cut and that I'd just tripped in the library. But I could feel the questions burning because nobody gets hurt in a library. Seriously. Once a doctor showed up to stitch my hand, I sent Maya home. She looked like she wanted to barf, but instead she kissed me, right in front of my mom, and raced out the door without looking back. My mom had the grace to wait until Maya was gone before she whistled. Paul showed up 2 seconds later, his lips pursed tight in a thin line. He clapped his hand on my back and had a silent conversation with my mom while the doctor stitched me back together. Paul didn't seem to do well with blood either. He immediately sat down in a chair near the door and put his head between his knees. I ordered them both to wait for me outside, and though Mom looked like she wanted to argue, Paul was able to get her out into the hall. I saw them through the crack in the blinds. They were speaking quickly, a look of pure determination on my mom's face. Then Paul did something I'd never seen him do before. He reached forward and put his hand on my mom's stomach. She stopped talking mid-sentence when Paul's face split into a wide grin. They looked happy, and I turned away to watch the doctor finish the last stitch, because it felt like their moment. Maybe it's time to increase the dosage again. When we got home, my mom and I had a long talk about what happened and what it might mean. Paul sat quietly, chiming in every so often to offer an opinion or agree with my mom. That's the nice thing about Paul. He knows how to have a serious discussion with someone without putting them down. It's nice to watch him talk to people. I guess that's why he's a good attorney. Anyway, it was decided that we'd talk about increasing my dosage. I still played tennis with Dwight on Monday. It's my left hand, so I'm fine. He'd already asked me at school how I'd heard it, but he didn't seem satisfied with any of my answers. So tell me again why you were running in the library? He asked. Because I'm an idiot, I said. Yes, I know. But seriously, he said. I just felt like running. In the library? He asked. Yes, in the library. He looked at me funny for a minute and then shrugged. Sometimes I wonder how much Dwight notices about me when we're together. Once in a while, I feel like he sees me do something slightly off, but he never says anything. He just lets it slide. Part of me wishes I could tell him. The rest of me thinks that's a bad idea. You asked what I thought about being a big brother. I haven't had time to really think about the baby as a real person yet. I guess I just hope that the kid doesn't mind that I'm messed up. Chapter 20.
Dosage 3 milligrams. Recommend an increase in dosage. Not yet approved.
January 23, 2013. Can't sleep. Again. It sucks when you can't sleep. It should be the easiest thing there is. I mean, you just have to lie there and let it happen to you, but still it dances just out of reach. It's been like this since I was little, but it got worse when I was diagnosed. But then, this is a common complaint among my people. We can't sleep, because if we do, the government agents plotting to kill us will slip into our bedrooms and modify the tiny metal chip they're using to track our thoughts. In my case, the insomnia is a symptom of the drug. Sometimes it makes sleeping feel like a chore, which is a drag because I love to sleep. Which brings me to the reason I miss school on Monday. Instead of sleeping on Sunday night, I made muffins, cookies, two pies, apple and blueberry, and lemon bars. Mostly because my room had been too crowded and noisy. Even Rebecca looked uncomfortable with everyone in there. The creepy guy with the bowler hat, the birds perched on the edge of my bed, the choir of voices that didn't belong to anyone I could see. I listened for about 10 minutes before I couldn't take it anymore. Jason sat in my chair with his feet up on my desk and reminded me to keep quiet so I didn't wake up Paul and my mom. He wasn't really an appealing image with his bare butt cheeks nestled into my furniture, even if he was politely trying to stay out of everyone else's way. Rebecca followed me to the kitchen, her eyes tired, her face drawn. I pulled out all the baking ingredients while she found a comfortable spot on a stool and watched. I closed all the doors leading to the kitchen and pulled out a whisk. I knew I couldn't use my stand mixer while Mom and Paul were sleeping, especially if I wanted to avoid awkward questions until morning. So I baked. I made shortbread cookies to dip in dark chocolate, tiny thumbprint peanut butter cookies, and really complicated little pinwheels with jelly in the center. I was in the zone. I couldn't hear anything except the sound of my spoon scraping the side of the bowl. Blissful silence. By the time I pulled the second pie out of the oven to cool, my mom was walking downstairs to have breakfast before work. Judging by her expression, I must have looked like hell. That took some explaining. But honestly, it's probably one of the least crazy, crazy things she's seen me do. She was mad about the mess, which was understandable. There wasn't an inch of counter space that wasn't covered in flour. But rather than yell at me about it, she just started assembling platters of cookies for Paul to take to work. When he walked downstairs and saw the piles of baked goods, he raised an eyebrow to my mom, who shrugged her shoulders and handed him two platters to carry out to his car while she followed him with lemon bars. Paul was actually pretty good about ignoring stuff like this. He says the people in his office like when I bake. "Leave the blueberry," was the last thing I remember saying. I didn't make it back to my bed. I was more tired than I'd ever been in my life. The kind of tired you feel when you don't know if you're already asleep. And my head was aching. I managed to send Maya a text telling her that I was staying home from school and to come over later for milk and cookies. I immediately followed this with a text saying, "That's not a euphemism for anything." Though I secretly kind of hoped it was. Also canceled tennis with Dwight. A few hours later, I staggered to bed, set the phone down on my nightstand, and let the choir sing me back to sleep. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I knew Mom would stay home from work, and for once, this didn't bother me. She was cautious, and that was okay. But for the moment, it was just me and Rebecca. She curled up against my chest and fell asleep. So here I am again in the darkness of my room, with nothing and no one to distract me, and still I can't sleep. I can't stay home tomorrow because I was already out today and I have academic team practice. I wouldn't be able to explain it to anyone, even though my mom would understand. So I'm writing to you because I'm so tired I feel drunk. I'm pissed that I can't just doze off like everyone else. But I don't want to take sleeping pills. I don't need more medication. Maya has been watching me more closely since the library incident, and I seem to be bumping into Ian more frequently at school. He definitely knows there's something wrong with me, so it makes me wonder if he's just waiting for the right moment to do something about it. Also makes me wonder how many other people are starting to notice, too. Maybe I should be taking more pills. Pills for hearing voices, pills for sleep, then pills for anxiety about taking too many pills. Yes, my hand is healing nicely. Thanks for asking. Chapter 21.
Dosage 3.5 milligrams. Increase in dosage approved.
January 30, 2013. You're slipping. I expected you to ask that question a long time ago. I mean, it's been months now. What if I'd been dwelling on death all this time and you just now asked me about it? Anyway, yeah, I used to think about death. Like I said before, my life was a scattered pile of crap when I didn't know if anything was real. I guess for a while I thought about it because death seemed peaceful. More importantly, it seemed quiet. I crave quiet. You have no idea how much time I spend trying to block out the noise in my head. There's no privacy. Someone is always with you, always watching, always talking about something. When you have a man in a yellow suit asking you what time it is over and over and over again, eventually you want to answer him because you know that is what will send him away. But he's not real. And other people can hear you when you answer his question, so it's hard not to feel frustrated by that. I don't need the attention. So I didn't think of death as a sad thing. I didn't fear it the way other people do, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. It was only ever bad when I craved it because being me was exhausting. Death seemed like a release that I was too cowardly to reach for because of my family. Even if I could settle on a method that didn't repulse me, I could never have put my mom through the pain of finding my body. Every day I worried about what I looked like to everyone else and what that would mean for my mom. And I was afraid. Rebecca looked really bad back then. But I don't think about death anymore. At least not the way I used to. Now I'm more concerned about noticing the Tozaprex's side effects before anyone else does. But sometimes I miss things. Like this week, when something new sprang up. I didn't know there was a name for it until it started happening more frequently. But it's called tardive dyskinesia. Involuntary muscle movements. It's one of the side effects of the drug. So yeah, you should probably write that down somewhere and make it official. In my case, it appears to be manifesting itself in grimaces and smacking of lips, which isn't awkward at all. I probably look like a toothless old man eating soup. I didn't even know I was doing it until Maya stared at me in our religion class and sent me a text. "Why are you frowning like that? Knock it off. You look scary." It must have looked pretty scary for Maya to text me during class. Sister Catherine has a strict no cell phone policy. She confiscates them and hangs them like dead bodies in a bag at the front of the class. But I risk getting caught to text her back. Bit the inside of my cheek. Ow. Maya shook her head and turned her attention back to the front of the class. There was sympathy for headaches, a shoulder shrug and a knowing expression that usually meant, "This too shall pass." But there was no sympathy for stupidity. I could almost hear her.
"You bit the inside of your cheek? Dumbass."
But Rebecca, at least, looked sympathetic. She always does. Sometimes it just takes a little effort to squish my face back into the shape it's supposed to be. I have to focus on the tiny muscles in my cheeks and press my fingers into the skin until the weird flutters of movement stop. It's not so bad. It's easy to pretend I'm just tired. Chapter 22.
Dosage 3.5 milligrams. Same dosage.
February 6, 2013. I'd been asleep for about an hour when Paul opened my door. I could see his silhouette through the hallway light. I could tell he was nervous. Paul never came into my room. He avoided it completely if he could help it. He'd just poke his head in if he needed something or talk to me from the hallway. I sat upright in bed.
"Your mom is bleeding, and I need to take her to the hospital."
The words sort of washed over me as my mom stepped past Paul and through the door. "Just a little bit. It happened once when I was pregnant with you," she said, touching my face. "We'll be fine. If you need anything, Paul's mom is on standby." She pressed her lips together like she had just eaten a lemon. Her classic, "I'm lying to sound brave" expression. Then she kissed me on the cheek. Paul didn't look convinced. His lips were also pressed together when he nodded, and he met my eyes just once before gently steering my mom toward the garage. Their car pulled out of the driveway almost silently, but I knew Paul was going to floor it the second they pulled out onto the main drag. The minute they left, I realized that I wouldn't be able to sleep. Even if I wanted to, I knew the minute I dozed off, I'd have to deal with the voices. This was probably one of those selfish moments when I shouldn't have been thinking about how hard it was to get back to sleep. I should have been focusing on my mom and Paul and the baby. But those were the things I couldn't control. It never made sense to me to worry about what happened to someone else unless I could help in some way. And I couldn't help. It was just past midnight, so I sent Maya a text telling her what was going on. It was kind of shitty of me. She was probably sleeping, and I could have woken her up. If not, then she'd be awake reading, and I'm bothering her with something she can't fix either. But I ended the text with, "So I'm texting you because I can't sleep." There was no response. So once again, I was wide awake and alone. I recited some of my favorite lines in my head. The St. Crispin's Day speech. The warning in front of Gringotts Bank. So I closed my eyes and waited for the sound of Mom and Paul's car. I knew it wouldn't happen for hours, but I needed something to focus on, and I didn't really want to give up on sleep. If I turned on the TV, I would have absolutely no chance of dozing off at all. If I opened a book or the blinds, I might get distracted by something. If I started baking now, I'd never stop, and my mom would never leave me alone in the house again. Paul's mom would move in with us, and that would be the end of my life. I was starting to think about my new little brother or sister, and my insides had started to go cold when my window opened of its own volition and a pair of legs stepped through. I pulled the blanket back up to my throat and waited. My nighttime visitors had never been real before, and my bedroom is on the second floor, so it was unlikely that someone had climbed the lattice leaning against the house. But when I heard the visitor speak, I doubted myself. "Adam?" she asked in the darkness. "Maya?
What are you doing here?"
I whispered.
"Being rebellious,"
she said, and I could tell even in the dark that she was smiling. Without warning, she kicked off her shoes and slipped into bed with me. My whole body went rigid when she threw her arm over my chest.
"You said you couldn't sleep," she said.
"And you thought you'd come help?"
"Nope."
She kissed me and everything sort of went fuzzy. With one leg on either side of my body, she reached down to tangle her fingers in my hair. Maya was not this girl. She was not the girl who climbed through her boyfriend's window for some midnight fondling. It wasn't her. And I knew better than to assume that my mind wasn't playing tricks on me. It seemed more likely that Maya was in her room, sleeping in her own bed. So while she was kissing me, I reached over her shoulder from my phone and sent her a text that said, "Hi." The tiny buzzing in her pocket was the most welcome sound I've ever heard in my life. How else was I supposed to tell if she was real? She pulled out her phone and raised an eyebrow. "Did you seriously just text me while we're making out?" And of course I didn't have an answer that didn't sound crazy. "Maybe," I said. "Idiot," she whispered. And she latched her lips back onto mine. We kissed for a while. Hours, maybe. My hands went everywhere, and for a few blissful moments, it felt like nothing was off limits. They drifted over her stomach and then lingered on her breasts. She breathed in deeply but didn't stop me. I've never really understood the preoccupation with the size of a girl's breasts. I mean, yes, we are drawn to an ample bosom the same way other primates are drawn to brilliantly colored hindquarters, but as my fingertips traveled over Maya's nipples, it didn't matter that her breasts were small. It didn't make me want them less, and I could feel her heart race when I circled them with my fingers, tracing the curve. It was early Saturday morning. She wouldn't be missed until her brothers woke up, and that wouldn't be for a few more hours. So I did what any guy would do in my situation. I searched for the line. The invisible line that all girls draw around them that governs where they will allow someone to touch them. I found it at the elastic band of her underwear. I thought for a moment that she was going to jump out of my bed and out the window, but she just redirected my hands somewhere else. A gentle, "not yet." I got the message. Eventually, we had to stop. Not because either of us wanted to, since I wasn't exactly in a hurry to end the best night of my life. But her parents would notice if she wasn't at home, and mine would notice if I had a guest in my room when they got back. "They're going to be fine," she said simply, nestling into my chest. I nodded. She'd come over to distract me, and it had worked. When she finally climbed out the window, which we both later agreed was completely unnecessary because my mom and Paul were gone, I stayed in bed just thinking. But the thoughts were sharp and painful, so I thought about Maya instead. My perfect, neurotic girlfriend who can get away with anything because no one expects her to do anything wrong. Mom and Paul got home around 10:30 in the morning. Everything was fine, just like Maya said it would be. Paul touched my shoulder in what he considered an affectionate sort of way, which I accepted. Mom kissed me on the top of my head before heading off to bed to sleep for a while. Then, and again, I don't know why I feel this compulsion to tell you this or anything for that matter, I went to my room and cried because I felt guilty for being selfish, for wanting to distract myself from what was happening to my mom. Maya sent me a text later. "Keep your window unlocked." I heard a train whistle. My mom told me something once, right after my dad left. You lose your secrets when you let people get too close. That was the scariest thing for her when she started dating. I get it now. It's hard to let someone find you in all the dark and twisty places inside. But eventually, you have to hope that they do. Because that's the beginning of everything. It's ridiculous that you would ask me why I haven't told Maya. You know me now, better than almost anyone. Even though you can't tell me what my voice sounds like, you read every word I write and talk to me for an hour every week. During that hour, you tell me stories about your life, or you make them up. It didn't occur to me until just now that everything you've told me might be a lie based on your need to connect with me, even though you can't fix me. Maybe that's the Harvard kid in you, trying to prove yourself or trying not to be a failure. I get that. You must have been under a lot of pressure to perform at school. From your plethora of diplomas, I can tell that you are a junior, meaning that someone thought it would be a good idea to name you after your father. I've never been a fan of that. Naming someone after someone else is a huge responsibility. What if you'd turned out to be a drug-addled teenager? But of course, that didn't happen. Maybe in this case, the name forced you to behave. But just so you know, any kid named Winston Xavier Edmonton III is basically asking to get their ass kicked. So if you did do this to one of your kids, and they happened to come home one day with a black eye, that's on you. But that's what people do to their kids, I guess. They give them a name and then expect that they'll grow into it eventually, never suspecting that it might never fit. Because it sucks to disappoint your parents. There's nothing more gut-wrenching than looking into their eyes and seeing that you're not what they expected. I'm not afraid of telling Maya about me. At least not in the same way I'm afraid of losing control. It's just not something I want to think about too much. I want to keep her far enough away so she won't ever have to see me as I actually am. I don't want to lose my secrets, because they keep me safe. The world can see what I choose to show it, because I am lucky enough to hide behind this drug. This miraculous, life-altering drug that has given me my strength back and protected me from myself. Funny when you have to take medicine to protect you from yourself, isn't it? I guess I just don't want her to know the truth. I'm afraid of what she'd do with that information. I doubt she'd ever climb through my window again. She might even be afraid to be alone with me. It might ruin the way she looks at me with her side smile, the one that secretly makes me feel like I'm waking up on the first day of summer vacation. I don't even care how cheesy that sounds, and I don't care how much time I have to waste in your office before you realize how useless this is. I'd really just like to keep my secrets for a while. I can always tell when my mom has gotten in your head. The questions are more direct. Yes, I was uncomfortable at the latest ultrasound appointment. Paul would probably have been okay with leaving me out of it, but he was a good sport for my mom's sake, as usual. Let's examine the situation for a second. For once, my discomfort has nothing to do with my illness. Not a goddamn thing. Any 16-year-old would want to barf upon seeing their heavily pregnant mother bare her gigantic belly as a doctor covers it with lube. My reaction, disgust, was not unnatural. My mom was lying on a table, half naked, while Paul erotically rubbed her shoulders and every so often whispered something in her ear. Then she blushed. Honestly, I don't need to see that, hear that, or be within 500 feet of that happening. The touching alone is really not something I need to witness. If her swollen stomach wasn't enough of an indicator, I already know that my mom is sexually active. And as her teenage son, I think I have done a really spectacular job of being okay with that. I am glad they're happy. It's great my mom won't need to work when the baby is born because this time she can afford to stay home if she wants. Yes, I'm being sincere. I get that everything happening in her life is a tremendous blessing, and she deserves every ounce of happiness. Even the nauseating, cutesy, romantic bullshit she and Paul are so good at. But Jesus Christ, I did not need to hear about my mom's uterine walls. I didn't need to know that having sex is a healthy way to induce labor when the time comes. I didn't need to watch Paul's hand travel up and down my mom's belly. I may never be able to unsee that. In fact, I'm pretty sure the images are burned into my eyelids. None of those moments were necessary for me. And you know the scariest part of the whole experience? When the doctor started talking about breastfeeding, my nipples started to hurt. My nipples. My nipples will never do an honest day's work in their lives, and yet they were concerned enough about my future brother or sister to burn with discomfort the moment someone else mentioned breastfeeding. I actually have a diagnosed mental condition that bothers me less than the fact that I have empathetic nipples. I don't even know if anything can be done about this, but I would genuinely like to believe that my areolas will go back to being decoration. And I know by the way you ask, how do you feel, that my mom is actually the one asking. She wants to know how I feel about the baby. It was her intention to make the doctor's appointment something we could all do together. I'm sure it looked more picturesque in her head. Everyone all smiley and gathered together around her belly. There was a moment that I liked, though. I got to hear the baby's heartbeat. The steady womp, 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 womp of blood pumping in and out of a tiny life that has no idea we're all watching it on the screen. We all sort of froze. My mom cried. Paul sort of teared up, and somewhere in the corner of the room behind the curtains, Rebecca was sobbing into her dress. When I told Maya about the heartbeat later, she squeezed my hand. I don't know why. Chapter 23.
Dosage 4 milligrams. Increased dosage.
February 13, 2013. You don't ask that many questions about my other doctors. The ones on the panel for the drug study? I think you probably avoid asking questions about them because you don't want to remind me that this drug is still experimental, and the only reason I am taking it is because Paul has a doctor friend who knew about the research and was able to get me into the study. Or maybe you don't like the thought of me seeing the other doctors because you think we have something special, and you'd hate to see me happily medicated with someone else, you sick bastard. After everything we've been through together, you're afraid I'd leave you for someone younger and prettier. I'll put your mind at ease. The doctors on the study panel are all old, but they do have a ton of young interns. Yeah, I see the other participants in the halls sometimes when my mom takes me in, but it's not exactly a place where I want to make friends. I know you said it might be beneficial to talk to people who are going through the same stuff I am, but I don't see that as helpful. I don't want to talk to other people like me. I can't help them. I'm crazy, too. The doctors ask me everything from the ever-popular,
"How do you feel?"
to the awkward,
"Does the drug seem to be causing any sexual complications for you?"
I am not having sex.
With masturbation?
No, that works fine.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's nice to know that even on the drug I can masturbate properly. The doctors seem gratified to learn this as well. They were pleased with all the results, actually. Since I'd been such a whack job to begin with, they were glad that the drug had completely transformed me, allowing me to live a relatively normal life. They congratulated themselves a lot on the success of the drug, the success of the study, and their overall brilliance. I was okay with it because it was benefiting me. But after a while, they did sound like douchebags. The thing about being smart is that you don't actually need to remind people you're smart every 5 seconds. It makes people want to kill you. I know that experimental treatments are for the ones who have no other options. You know about the incident that got me enrolled in the study, of course. It's all in my file. You've got to understand that I was sick. Not just the regular kind of schizo sick in the head. I had a fever. I was burning up. Little puddles of sweat had formed in my eye sockets, and I could feel the moisture weighing down my lids. I remember feeling disoriented, like I'd suddenly lost my balance. That was when I saw it slither underneath the kitchen cabinets. A thick green snake that I thought had come in from the backyard. I leaped onto the table. I grabbed my mom's kitchen scissors and stabbed at it as its tail whipped back and forth, slapping the tile. It lunged, and I brought the scissors down on what I thought was its body. My mom found me in a pool of my own blood, the handles of the scissors jutting out of my thigh. I don't even remember doing it. Sometimes I think I can remember the blinding pain and the loud crack of my head hitting the ground. But then I remember the snake, too. So I don't trust my memory. That was after they'd taken me out of school. When I spent almost 6 months in my house, unable to do anything and not wanting to move. Rebecca didn't smile back then. She definitely didn't twirl. We just sort of covered ourselves in blankets and watched reruns of Avatar: The Last Airbender. I had really awful reactions to the first few drugs they tried. One of them actually landed me in the hospital with chest pain, so I was pretty sure I'd never be able to live my life. I was angry all the time. Usually I did what the voices told me to do because I just wanted them to stop. I wanted it to end. And I knew the fastest way to make that happen was to just do it. Slap my own face, pinch my skin, run, and don't stop running. Is it weird that I think part of me will never stop running? Ah, yes, the baby. At 5 months, it should be about 10 inches long. It can hear our voices now, so my mom makes a big deal about everyone talking to her belly. Paul and I take turns doing this, because we love her. It's actually a testament to our love that neither of us said a word when she burst into tears because her feet were too fat for her slippers, even though her voice got really high and squeaky and we probably could have laughed about it. Last night, before dinner, my voices were singing to me. I actually like it when they do that because it's a nice break from them telling me that my family would be better off if I killed myself. They weren't singing any words that I recognized, but I hummed along for a while until the tune sort of floated out of me. I didn't notice my mom step through the doorway while I was doing this, but when I looked up, she was smiling, her hands clasped over her belly. She said the baby liked my voice. I didn't argue with her. Yes, of course I have something planned for Valentine's Day. It's tomorrow. Do you have something planned? You're the one married with 3 kids. It's almost expected that I am going to do something because Maya and I are young and stupid and can celebrate this holiday by watching a crappy movie, eating a crappy dinner, and ending the evening with inappropriate touching. I'm not sure why it's relevant to you if I have a physical relationship with my girlfriend. Maybe you get off thinking about it. I wouldn't be surprised. You seem like the type to have weird fetishes like that, but to answer your question, no, we have not had sex. We have done everything else, though, which makes us far from innocent, I can assure you. And it usually happens during academic team matches. Since she doesn't know I go to therapy every Wednesday, she doesn't have to know what I tell you. In fact, it's better that she has no idea what we talk about. It can stay between us. There's no reason for me to feel guilty about writing this to you. But even as I write this, I feel Rebecca cringe. She doesn't like secrets, but she also really doesn't like it when I talk about Maya. It makes her feel uncomfortable, like it's a betrayal of trust or something. But here's the thing. I feel guilty sometimes about not talking to you. The least I can do is be completely honest here. This is still my free space, where I can write anything that comes to mind, anything that needs to be evaluated. It's nice having a place to work this stuff out. But you don't care about that. You want to know what I do with my girlfriend and how it makes me feel. Every damn time. And how do you feel today, Adam? I have to give you credit for continuing to ask the same question and continuing to wait for a verbal response. You are stubborn. But you know what? I think it would be better if everyone in the entire world stopped asking people how they feel and started talking about what they think. Nobody gives a shit about feelings. They are useless, pathetic wastes of time for believers in astrology and unicorns. I think that touching Maya is unlike anything I've ever done. When the seniors compete in their academic team match, we usually sneak out. Everyone knows what we're doing, but nobody says anything. It's like an unspoken code. Sometimes we go to the football field, or sometimes the basketball courts. High school campuses are great places to make out when no one is there. The hidden spaces are endless. I wonder if people think about that when designing them. I've learned all the ways she likes to be kissed, and I've mastered the appropriate amount of tongue, which was not as easy as I thought it would be. Adding tongue to kissing is delicate business. I wasn't sure how to do it until I felt hers in my mouth, slowly examining my tongue, then retreating back into her mouth, inviting me in. The kisses on the neck seemed to get an immediate response, but here's something I didn't know. It's the ears that drive her crazy. Gentle nibbling, nothing too aggressive, lightly. It almost feels better to know that she likes something than to have her do something I like. At some point, she always stops me. Then we have to wait until I can stand again. When we get back to the match, no one asks about where we'd been. Turns out, Dwight has even been making excuses for us with Sister Helen. He's a good guy. Chapter 24.
Dosage 4.5 milligrams. Increased dosage.
February 20, 2013. St. Agatha's Choir raises money for their D.C. trip by charging $5 for a singing telegram on Valentine's Day. This means that class came to a screeching halt every time they burst into our classroom. Rebecca loved it. She danced along to the music as if nothing could possibly be more glorious. Meanwhile, Jason stood next to me and kept muttering, "Be cool, try smiling. I know this is lame, but try not to look like such an angry giant." Both Marys got a telegram in English. Rosa from academic team got one in biology from her boyfriend on the cross-country team. Claire got one from her secret admirer, which was Dwight because he told me he was going to do it and wanted to know how lame that was on a scale of 1 to 10. 7, I told him. I asked Maya if it would make me a bad boyfriend if I didn't send her a singing telegram for Valentine's Day. "Please don't," she said seriously. "I'll die." I laughed and agreed not to. We spent the rest of the morning watching the parade of red and pink balloons wander the halls between classes, and I gave her the heart-shaped cookies I'd baked her, which turned out to be so much better than the telegram. Her words, not mine. Ian happened to be walking through the hallway at the same time. He saw the cookies and said, "Are those an apology because you're too cheap to get her an actual gift?" I was going to respond when Maya kissed me pointedly and inappropriately in the middle of the hallway, causing people to whistle and catcall. She raised an eyebrow at Ian and pulled me into class. "Nicely done," I said. "I know," said Maya. In honor of Valentine's Day, Sister Catherine made a big deal about discussing chastity and the virtues of saving yourself for marriage. She did this while one of the Marys in the front row scratched unconsciously at the birth control patch on her back. Don't ask me how I know this. There are, of course, the religious types whose parents have convinced them that sex is a nasty invention of the morally depraved, whose only unsavory purpose is to create tiny, mucus-covered infants. But they're weirdos, and everyone knows it. I'd like to tell you that my Valentine's Day went by without incident, but I guess stuff is starting to slip through the cracks. Either the dose is too low, or my body has gotten too used to it. That can't happen, right? Either way, something feels off, and I could feel myself losing control fairly early in the night. It's not like Maya and I had never been on a date before. We've had meals together and gone places together and done all the things most couples would label date-like activities, but I guess there's something about Valentine's Day that makes it official. No amount of late-night study sessions and fondling can replace the sight of two other couples from school seeing you out with your girlfriend. It's a rite of passage. Maya drove. I had a headache when I got in the car, but didn't say anything. She looked beautiful. Like, really beautiful. Something about the way she was smiling. She didn't seem worried about anything. And she was wearing blue. I like her in blue. She was the kind of beautiful that makes other guys jealous. There's something kind of awesome about having something that other people want. That's messed up, I know, but that isn't the only reason I was glad she looked so great. It was nice that the rest of the world got to see her that way. "So it's our first Valentine's Day," she said after we sat down at our table. "Is this the part where we stare into each other's eyes and say what we like about each other?"
"That sounds pretty lame," I said.
"How about we stare into each other's eyes and say what we know about each other? A recap, if you will." She laughed, scooted her chair closer, and fixed me with a laser-focused stare. "Okay, you start," she said. "You still can't swim."
"I can, too. I took the lessons you got me. At least now I won't drown."
"I doubt you'll get arm floaties when the ice caps melt, Maya." "Well, you're a really slow runner," she grinned. It went on for a while, this picking on each other. Completely inappropriate for Valentine's Day, but we couldn't stop laughing. She bites her nails, I don't walk straight, she hates bananas, I can't pronounce Spanish words, she's afraid of hippos, I love Star Wars. You're a lot sweeter than you look, she said.
What's that supposed to mean?
I asked playfully, eyebrows raised, with my mouth full of ravioli.
I don't mean it like that. It's just that some people might be intimidated by you because you're so big, and you look kind of stern sometimes. But you're kind. And actually really thoughtful.
Thanks, I said, pretending to blush. How do I look stern?
You get headaches a lot more than you should, she said finally. I think they make you a little twitchy.
I thought about this for a second and nodded. And you notice things that other people don't, I said. Actually, Maya's perceptiveness is really inconvenient. It's gotten a lot harder to hide things from her, and I don't want her to dig any deeper into my headaches or twitchiness. I'll have to start making a bigger effort to distract her from that. So we finished dinner and even managed to catch a sunset by the beach, which I thought was cliché, but she seemed to like. It was when we got to the theater playing black and white movies that I really started feeling sick. It was one of those old theaters with burgundy plush cushioned seats. There weren't that many people there, which was good because it wasn't stadium seating. Meaning that I would easily block the view of anyone sitting behind me. Rebecca, who had been conspicuously absent all day, was sitting three rows ahead of us. When she looked back, she seemed worried. My pulse quickened and I took Maya's hand. I was not going to ruin Valentine's Day for her. I was going to be her normal boyfriend. The kind who holds her hand and tells her she looks beautiful. For a little while, I was able to be that guy. We were watching Casablanca. When I'd planned the date, I thought it would be a good idea to watch something both of us had already seen. No need to pay attention. The sound was a half second behind the picture, which was doing weird things to my head. But there were a few minutes when I thought I could watch the movie like everyone else. Until I felt that familiar tug at the back of my brain. The tiny piece of me that wants to believe everything I see took control. It was at the part when Ilsa enters the nightclub and asks the guy at the piano to play As Time Goes By, knowing that it would get Rick's attention. The room of crowded people was hard to watch. Everyone was doing something different, drinking, talking. It was hard to focus on what was going on and not lose the story. That was when I noticed that the people on screen had started to merge into the theater. None of them were staying put on the screen. They sank into the audience, and I jumped a little when the German soldiers burst into the club. Are you okay? Maya asked. I'm fine, I lied. For another 10 minutes, I moved between varying degrees of panic. I was losing it. Rebecca had started to cry. Neither of us could control what was happening. Then, somewhere in the movie, guns started going off and tiny shards of glass fell from the ceiling. Whatever shield I had been using to hide my crazy disappeared. I leaned over, yanked Maya to the ground, and protected her from the bullets I thought were blasting through the theater. I cupped her body gently so she didn't hit the ground too hard. My elbows got the brunt of the fall. I really did believe the bullets were flying, and I was crying a little because I thought I wouldn't be able to save her. The top half of her body fit neatly into the curve of my arm, and once we hit the sticky movie theater floor, she looked up at me for a second in shock. She started kissing me. I couldn't understand what was happening. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I noticed that the couples who had been sitting in our row had moved somewhere else when I launched my girlfriend from her seat and dragged her to the floor. But Maya was kissing me like I hadn't just done something completely irrational. Or maybe she was kissing me because I had done something completely irrational. And if that was the case, should I have been worried about her? No, really, I'm asking you. This is what we pay you for. The only real thing in the world was her lips. She was kissing me and running her fingers through my hair. Maybe she thought I was sexy. The rest of the people in the theater might have kept watching Casablanca. I could still hear the movie going. I'll never know, though, because I was on the discussing movie theater floor, making out with my girlfriend. We didn't get up when the movie ended, The guy who comes around and sweeps up the popcorn found us and told us we had to leave so they could let people in for the next show. We weren't even embarrassed. I feel fine now. I'm not disoriented anymore. I guess it was just a passing thing. When I replay the events of that night with a clear head, I can see that I must not have tugged Maya to the ground that hard. I must not have looked as outwardly afraid as I felt inside. I probably wasn't crying. Maybe I just teared up. We must have looked like two teenagers who really wanted to make out on Valentine's Day instead of watch a movie we've both seen before. I know how this sounds. I've written this whole thing down several times, and I still can't find anything that needs to be changed. The details seem correct, and even though I can anticipate your questions, answering them seems boring. I might have had a momentary lapse of judgment. It's entirely possible that my mind played images that had absolutely nothing to do with what I actually did. But sometimes the things that happen aren't as important as the things you remember. Maya looked beautiful. We had a relatively normal Valentine's Day dinner followed by normal Valentine's Day activities that did not lead to sex. I wasn't even that crushed by that. I remember kissing her in the minivan for a long time until my lips hurt. She dropped me off at my house, and I walked through the front door to find Paul working on his laptop. He asked how the date was. I told him it was good. He looked like he'd been waiting up for me. He cracked his knuckles again like he did when he was forcing conversation. "Yes?" I asked. Paul looked up at me like he was going to lay an egg. He had something to say that he didn't want to say. Like, really didn't want to say. It looked painful for him when he actually spoke.
"In your bathroom, behind the toilet paper, there's a box of condoms."
We both looked at each other. He nodded. Then I nodded. And I knew we would never talk about it again. But I laughed when I got back to my room. I appreciated the gesture, but I have been walking around with a condom in my wallet for over a month. I will be ready when Maya is. Chapter 25.
Dosage 4.5 milligrams, same dosage.
February 27, 2013. Awesome. Just awesome. I got picked to play Jesus for the junior class's rendition of the Stations of the Cross for Easter. This is basically the worst thing that's ever happened to me at this school. Kids vote on who plays Jesus, Mary Magdalene, Veronica, and Mary, Jesus' mother. It's highly political. No one ever wants to do it, so people sort of gang up on other, less popular people and get them to do the big roles with the majority of the speaking lines, leaving the highly coveted crowd member positions wide open. I'm pretty sure that Ian had something to do with my campaign for Jesus, though, because I'm actually not detested at school. Dwight managed to snag a narrator spot, which is the next best thing to crowd member, where all you have to do is say, "Crucify him!" at the right time. "How did you manage that?" I asked him. "I volunteered." "Why the hell didn't you tell me to volunteer for something?" I asked. "It's every man for himself, dude." That rat bastard. He could have told me. He could have told me to volunteer for something else. Instead, he just said, "Jesus, though, man, that sucks." The worst thing is that I am taller than the plywood cross they usually use. Therefore, not only am I quiet, secretly schizophrenic Jesus, I am also giant Jesus. Giant, arms wide open, Rio de Janeiro Jesus. They have to find me a bigger cross. During our very first run-through, I looked absolutely ridiculous carrying over my shoulder a tiny cross that didn't even touch the ground. I would have had to squat to be nailed to it. It's the only time I've ever seen Maya laugh in church. To her credit, she was laughing with me and not at me, like the rest of them, I think. She didn't get off easy, though. She's Mary Magdalene, which is highly amusing and makes me think that my classmates are actually smarter than they look. St. Agatha's does not take its Stations of the Cross lightly. Every class has to do its own performance, and Maya says,